So if you saw on the schedule there, I titled this message, Marriage, a Lifelong Courtship. So we've been talking about this courtship thing and relationships in the body of Christ and this whole area for us. But I wanted to end with a little talk on marriage. You know, courtship is supposed to end in marriage. It doesn't always end up that way. Sometimes God leads otherwise. But I wanted to talk a little bit about that here. And this is going to hopefully be fairly short and just a little more of a meditation, a little bit of a inspiration, maybe a shot in the arm for us married folks. And for the ones who are not married, to realize that there is a higher purpose in marriage than just falling in love with somebody, living happily ever after. God has a higher purpose for that, for marriage than that. So this is not going to be a deep dissertation on marriage at all, but more just some simple meditations and maybe an inspirational type of thing for our marriages. So the title is, I actually have the title on my paper as Marriage, a Passionate Lifelong Courtship. Now, my wife and I have only been married for just a few short years, about 17 this year, I think, right? I think 17. I'm still trying to figure out how marriage is supposed to work. It's a joy. It's a joy figuring it out. But but there's a lot of this that when I was preparing for this, it was convicting to me. I realized, you know what? I need this shot in the arm. We need to stir up some of these things again. So, what we understand marriage to be will have a direct effect on our relationships in marriage. If marriage is simply a contract by law where we both sign the papers and now it's on the books, we're married, we can take money out of our taxes in a different way, we can, you know, if it's just a contract together and we're married on the books, but then we go our own separate ways, if that's how we look at it, you know, we'll fall far short of the picture that God gives to us of marriage. Marriage is a legal contract in the, you know, according to the state laws. Marriage is a physical union, but marriage goes a lot deeper than that. I'm just going to look at one practical part of marriage, of this aspect of marriage being a lifelong courtship. So we've been talking about courtship, and I realized the last session I skipped a bunch of things, practical things of what to do in courtship, but what marriage is a continuation of all that started in that courtship. Now, that word passionate that I added in there in the title here, it says passionate means strong feelings. The emotions as distinguished from reason. And so you wonder, why did you put that in the title then? But now we're married. So you've courted and now you're married. And so now marriage is a passionate, emotions as distinguished from reason, lifelong courtship. And of course, the word courtship, we didn't even define that earlier, but that's the act of gaining the favor of another, to attract, to woo, to tempt the other. It's courting, you know, that's what happens in a courtship, to woo each other. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4 is a very common verse. Y'all are familiar with this. But just read this, just to get this into our minds, that marriage is a good thing. Hebrews chapter 13 says, marriage is honorable in all, it says. Marriage is an honorable thing. Now, a celibate life is also honorable. And we don't have many celibate lives, people choosing that in our generation. And I've wondered why sometimes. But God does call people to that. And I think there ought to be some faithful men and women that choose to serve the Lord with all their lives, and because they simply love the Lord and they want to be about His business. But marriage is honorable. It's and there are those, but there are few that have to live a celibate life in order to focus more on God. And there's others whose circumstances simply have not permitted them to marry. It's just, that's the way it is. But the design and plan for God for most people is marriage. That's how he designed mankind and men and women to be, is to end up in marriage. That's the, for most people. So, let's just establish the fact from the beginning that marriage is an honorable thing. It's what God designed. It's not something second rate. It's not something people do because they can't handle themselves and can't keep themselves pure, and so they get married, and so it's honorable. It's the way God designed it. When I was single, I don't know, back when I was single and old enough to get married, but I was celibate. I was going to be a single missionary. And I talked to some people about doing that, and they didn't think I would last too long, didn't think it was a good idea. And one brother actually did get behind me with that, and he said, you know, maybe God is calling you to that, John. And I prayed about that earnestly. But there was that time, and you know, I was going through and living in West Africa as a missionary, and one evening I went out to do some, I forget what it was, there was a meeting somewhere or preaching somewhere, and I went to this brother's house, and his name was Mayoba, and I spent the night at his house after those meetings, and he was a young married man, a little older than I was, but he had a wife and a couple of children. But I got up the next morning, you know, if you've ever been in an African setting, if you ever travel over there, I like that village setting, and there's mud houses everywhere, and the mornings, people get out and the fires get started, you hear the crackling of the wood and the fire, and the pots getting hot with boiling water, and they're making their morning porridge, and it was one of those kind of mornings, just kind of an ideal, sun's coming up. And I was sitting there with Mayoba waiting for, he was actually making the breakfast, which was unusual for a man. And he was raising pigeons. He had a lot of pigeons there. And while he was making breakfast, getting the fire started, these pigeons, you know, would come and they would circle up and fly around and they'd come back and land. And you know how pigeons are, you know, there's always two of them. You know, they wherever pigeons go, there's two of them, and they, you know, they're always. If you watch pigeons, they're lovebirds. I mean, they're always kissing each other, they're feeding each other, and then the males, they're courting and, you know, fluffing up his feathers, and then they get all of a sudden something just gets in their notion, they fly off, but they're always together, always two by two. And I was just watching that and watching these pigeons. Of course, at that time of life, I was single and was starting to feel that I was one, and that I kept seeing two everywhere I looked. and maybe nobody else figured that I had that experience, but that's how it was for me. I just started noticing two by two everywhere I went, and these pictures were that way. And I was watching, of course, Mayoba, I was supposed to be discipling him, but he looked at me. He was making breakfast, and he pointed those pigeons out to me. He said, "Mr. John," he said, do you see those birds? You know, the way they're, do you see?" And he started giving me a marriage seminar. he said, "Do you know, Mr. John?" I said, "Those, you know, there's always two by two, and they mate for life. You know, they are, it's always those two. They will never mate with another one, and they're always courting. You know, they're always, that's just how they are their entire life." And he'd raised pigeons. He knew what he was talking about. And he gave me this little marriage seminar on pigeons. And he said, "Mr. John, you need to learn from the pigeons. You need to find a wife." But I did learn a lesson that day from these birds. And I've watched them. I enjoy watching pigeons. But it's fascinating to me. They mate for life. And they're always courting. You just watch them. They are always into each other, these pigeons. They just like each other. They like to be with each other. They're always flying together. In fact, we used to dove hunt, which that's not pigeon, but the same type of thing happens with doves. But it sounds awful to say it now, but when you shoot a dove, I don't know if you've ever been a dove hunting, but you'd shoot a dove and the one, you know, it would fall and the other one would follow right behind it. You know, it was the way it was. They stuck together. That's the nature of pigeons and doves. They're always together. Well, there is a marriage seminar we can learn from those birds. There's a reason why they're called lovebirds. Marriage ought to be a lifelong courtship, and we can learn a lot from those critters. Marriage, a passionate, lifelong courtship. So we talked about what to do in courtship, and you young people, don't think this is out of your ballpark if you're not married. You know, I'm sharing this on purpose because there is a reason, there's a vision that you need to have. Too many people enter into marriage having this, I don't know, low down vision, and it falls flat, and before you know it, I mean, they're into each other's hair, and they can't stand to live together anymore, and there's problems. But what we've talked about what to do in courtship, laying a spiritual foundation, laying a foundation of communication. Well, those things ought to continue right on into marriage. Don't quit those once you're married. You just continue right on courting each other. Continue on building up that spiritual foundation. Continue on keeping that channel of communication open. You are together. You do things together. And this whole thing of like it was before you were married, you're trying to attract each other. You're trying to understand each other. And that should just continue right on into your marriage, throughout your entire marriage. I'm getting ahead of myself in my notes here. Well, we all know these things here. I think we've been well taught on this subject of marriage, but marriage was something designed by God. Let's just read that. We saw this yesterday when I read these verses in Genesis chapter 2, but I'll just say this again because Satan would have us believe that marriage is something we come up and do ourselves and make it happen ourselves, and it's just what I want to do, and we get it planned. This is something God designed, and you're familiar with these verses in Genesis chapter 2, where the Lord God said in verse 18, that it's not good that man should be alone. I will make him an help suitable for him. And out of the ground the Lord formed every beast of the field and of the fowl of the air and brought them unto Adam to see what he would call them. And whatsoever Adam called every living creature, that was the name thereof. And Adam gave names to all the cattle and to the fowls of the air and to every beast of the field, but for Adam there was not found an helper suitable for him. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib, which the Lord God had taken from man, made he a woman and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh, and she shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. It was God that saw the need of man, and it was God who designed marriage. And this design was not a mistake. There was not a mistake that he took a rib out of the side of man. There was a purpose and a reason why God did it this way. It was God who designed and ordained that a man should leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife and become one flesh. That's passionate. Right? That is a strong feeling, an emotion that is distinguished from reason. It does not make sense that a woman, a man, a young man would leave his father and mother. I mean, they have got a home, they've got security, they've got finances, they've got... Why in the world would a man leave his father and mother and go try to start his own home? I mean, that is just, it's not even reasonable. Like, it's passionate. There's a reason for it. It's emotion that's distinguished from passion. It's not, financially doesn't make sense. It'd be better to pull your resources together. There's just a lot of things that doesn't make sense there, but it's what God has designed. And it's meant to be passionate. It's meant to have to be strong feelings in that in marriage. Well, marriages are designed and ordained by God. Marriage is lifelong. And again, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir on this, but I think it's good for us to consider these things. But in Romans chapter 7, again, we looked at that passage the other evening from a different angle. But in Romans chapter 7, I realize he's talking about the relationship of he's using this as an illustration. He's not exactly, this is not his main subject, but he does use this as an illustration because this is the way it is. Marriage is to be lifelong. And verse 1, he says, "Know ye not, brethren, for I speak to them that know the law, how that the law hath dominion over a man as long as he liveth. For the woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband so long as he liveth. But if the husband be dead, she is loosed from the law of her husband. So then, if, while her husband liveth, she be married to another man, she shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she is free from the law, so that she is no adulteress, though she be married to another man." To me, that's very simple, and we could go into Christ's teachings as well, but it's very clear that this thing of a man leaving his father and mother and cleaving to his wife is meant to be a lifelong reality. It's not a once and done thing, and if it didn't work out, we can swap to someone else and try something different. It's meant to be a lifelong reality. And I think this whole thing of this courtship thing is to be a lifelong reality as well when it comes into our marriage. It doesn't just stop there. There's a tendency, especially I think for us men, we have goals set in life, and one of those goals is to get married, many of us. And so you get married, you've got your wife, and you move on to the next thing. And we forget that it's meant to be a lifelong courtship, a lifelong relationship of wooing. We also see in this passage that the woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband. That we see an exclusiveness here in this relationship. It's lifelong, it's exclusive, and in marriage you continue to keep yourself for each other just like you did when you were courting. Those same standards that you have where you kept your heart, you kept your emotions, you didn't just release them on everybody else when you were single, you do the same thing when you're married. Your love is only given to one. Your eyes are only for one. Like the Song of Songs says, "As the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons." There's one person that has caught your attention. It's only your husband. It's only your wife. And that's the only one that catches your eye. And that's the only one where you go to enjoy the shade and the fruit that that relationship can give to you. That's marriage. That's God's heart for marriage. Marriage is being heirs together the grace of life, 1 Peter tells us. Let's just read that passage as well. Somebody could quote that for me probably. First Peter 3 and verse 7. I'm in 2 Peter. "Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life." Now, think back to those pigeons with me. When I read this verse, that's what I think about. I mean, those two birds, they are heirs together of life. I mean, they just do life together. They enjoy life together. They enjoy being together. Where one goes, the other goes. You can't separate them. And okay, you'll see one doing this way maybe a little bit, but they come right back together again. They are together. They're heirs together the grace of life. They do life together. A lifelong courtship. They love being together. One goes to town, the other goes to town. One starts a project, the other joins right in. They're together, whatever they do in this marriage relationship. Enjoying the blessings of life together. When one's in trouble, the other's in trouble with it. They do life together. Heirs together of the grace of life. This is a lifelong courtship for a marriage. This is God's heart for it. Go to Ephesians chapter 5, and this is where I feel like God's purpose in marriage is probably more clearly portrayed than anywhere else in Scripture. And marriage is to be the picture of Christ in the church. And we see that in Ephesians chapter 5 here. And so if you think marriage is just the carnal thing that people do, they want to get married, and they want to have children, and they want to have a family, this passage throws that out the window. There is a much higher calling for marriage. And the world needs to see this. Marriage is to be a picture of Christ in the church. Let's start reading in verse 24. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hateth his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Marriage is to be a picture of Christ and the church. Now this gets deeper than I think I can get into it. That's deeper than words can tell. God had something in mind when he created male and female way back in the Garden of Eden. He wanted it to be a picture of something. He wanted it to portray something of his purposes and of his glory to the world. Your marriage is not just about you as husband and wife. It's about God. It's not just about you. It's about God and his plan and design for marriage and for the church. It's meant to portray in a visible way the deep and the glorious relationship of Christ and the church. That is what it's meant to portray. God loving before he was loved. God giving of himself for the church's redemption and its very existence. It's meant to portray that. God patiently feeding, patiently instructing, tenderly caring for the church, as he's done ever since he called it to being back there in the wilderness before Mount Sinai. And then the church responding to that love with overwhelming thankfulness and joyful, glad submission and obedience. The church reverencing him, she in him, he in her. And if you go to verse 26 and 27, you see courtship happening there. As Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy without blemish. Do you see that wooing of Christ? He's giving himself for her, and then he's washing her, he's cleansing her. There's this courtship going on between Christ and his church. And our marriages are supposed to be a picture of that. Go to Hosea chapter 2. Back in the Old Testament. See, Christ, God was courting his bride way back since the days when he called Abraham. And we know the story of the history of that church in the wilderness and their failings and their falterings and their sin and their awfulness that they went into. And here in Hosea, he's called this prophet Hosea to give an example to the children of Israel and he directed them how to do that. But in chapter 2 here, we get this picture of the courting heart of God for his bride. How he has been courting her. He's been trying to woo her to himself and what he's going to do. And it's a beautiful picture here. Um, And he's using Jose's relationship with this, his wife, to bring this out. Let's just read in verse 2. Plead with your mother, plead. He's talking to the children there. For she is not my wife, neither am I her husband. Let her therefore put away her whoredoms out of her sight and her adulteries from between her breasts. Lest I strip her naked and set her as in the day that she was born, and make her as a wilderness, and set her like a dry land, and slay her with thirst. And all of these are pictures of what God's relationship was with Israel because of her sin. And I will not have mercy upon her children, for they be the children of whoredoms. For their mother hath played the harlot, she that hath conceived them hath done shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers, that give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax, mine oil and my drink. Therefore, behold, I will hedge up thy way with thorns, and make a wall that she shall not find her paths. And she shall follow after her lovers, but she shall not overtake them. And she shall seek them, but shall not find them. You see that courting? He said, I'm gonna hedge her in because she's gonna go after that, but I'm gonna bring her back to me so she can't go that way. And I'm gonna keep her here with me. And she was gonna go, and she says she can't overtake them. And then she'll say, I will go and return to my first husband, for then it was better with me than now. For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. Therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof and my wine in the season thereof, and will recover my wool and my flax given to cover her nakedness. And now will I discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of mine hand. I will also cause all her mirth to cease, her feast days, her new moons, her Sabbaths, and all her solemn feasts. And I will destroy her vines and her fig trees, whereof she hath said, these are my rewards that my lovers have given me, and I will make them a forest, and the beasts of the field shall eat them. And I will visit upon her the days of Balaam, wherein she burned incense to them, and she decked with her earrings and her jewels, and she went after her lovers and forgot me, saith the Lord. Now listen, that this awful woman who was yet a bride, This is Christ, this is God pursuing his bride. This courting, he's still courting his bride here. He says, therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak comfortably unto her. And I will give her her vineyards from thence in the valley of Achor for a door of hope. And she shall sing there as in the days of her youth and as in the day when she came up out of the land of Egypt. And it shall be at that day, saith the Lord, that thou shalt call me Ishi, and shalt know me no more, shalt call me no more Baali, or otherwise, Ishi would be my husband. Thou shalt call me my husband, and shalt no more call me my master. I think would be a way you could translate that. For I will take away the names of Balaam out of her mouth, and they shall no more be remembered by their name. And in that day will I make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, and with the fowls of heaven, and with the creeping things of the ground. And I will break the bow and the sword and the battle out of the earth, and will make them lie down safely. And I will betroth thee unto me forever. Yea, I will betroth thee unto me in righteousness, and in judgment, and in loving kindness, and in mercies. I will even betroth thee unto me in faithfulness, and thou shalt know the Lord. And it shall come to pass in that day, I will hear, saith the Lord, I will hear the heavens, and they shall hear the earth. And the earth shall hear the corn, and the wine, and the oil, and they shall hear Jezreel. And I will sow her unto me in the earth, I will have mercy upon her that had not obtained mercy. And I will say to them which are not my people, thou art my people. And they shall say, thou art my God. That's the courting heart of God for his bride. He's pursuing her. He sees her going the wrong way, and he said, I'm going to put this hedge up here, and she's going to come, and I'm going to lure her, I'm going to call her out, and then I'm going to bless her, I'm going to pour these things on her, and she's going to call me husband instead of master. There's going to be a relationship there. That's God's courting heart for his bride. Marriage is supposed to be a picture of that. Don't stop courting your bride, your spouse. This thing's supposed to continue on through your entire life, regardless of what you go through. And we see the commitment of God to this church. It was beautiful during the days of David and Solomon, when the church's heart was turned towards God in purity, and in many ways there, things were beautiful there. And when the church seeks out the interests of Christ, and Christ is seeking out the interests of the church, it's a beautiful thing. But he had commitment during this wilderness. and we see as soon as she would turn her heart to him, his love immediately was poured out on her. And he took her back in and he cared for her and he called her to himself. Marriage is supposed to be a picture of that, a picture of God's courting heart for his bride. Just as the church, you know, when we're a church that is looking out for Christ's interest and involved in his kingdom work, the more we do that, the more power and fulfillment will flow into our lives as believers. When the church is right related to Christ, and there's that vibrant, unselfish love being poured out on Christ, then that will begin to bubble over and begin to bless many other people. And the same thing for our marriages. When that relationship is passionate, is hot, and it is unselfishly bent towards loving each other and caring for each other, and there's this courtship happening, that relationship will continue to bubble over and affect many others around them. Marriage, a lifelong courtship. Outdo each other with unselfishness. See, we do that in our courting days, right? I mean, Nathaniel drove how far for 10 hours, whatever it is, 9 hours out there regularly to go see his girlfriend. And I drove 12, 13 hours to go see mine. We unselfishly, we didn't think much of it. And we got bent over backwards because we wanted to be with this girl. And well, the same thing should continue all through marriage. Outdo each other with unselfishness. That's a lifelong courtship. Marriage is like a fire. You've got to keep stoking it. You got to keep firing up that romantic blaze, that heart of love for each other. And it's a constant, lifelong courting process. And you've all seen these old couples. I guess we have older couples here, don't we? We don't think about that. I don't think of y'all as old. But it's beautiful when you see an older couple that are still holding hands and they're smiling at each other, walking through the grocery store, and you can tell they love to be together. That didn't just happen. Somewhere, somebody kept stoking that fire. And they kept feeding that fire. And here they are in their twilight years, still in love with each other. And it's right for couples to be intensely for each other when they're married. So I was talking to you young people earlier about guarding those emotions and keeping that. And so that you have that, you've kept yourself for each other before you're married. But when you're married, it is right for couples to be intensely in love with each other. It's what God intended. It's good. Somehow, those things tend to die down if we're not careful, and we need to stoke up those fires. Marriage is intended to be a lifelong courtship. Remember those pigeons? They're always courting. They're always for each other. I'll just close with this reading from Tertullian. And this is a marriage worth aiming for. He was contrasting the marriage of an unbeliever compared to that of a believer. He said, What kind of yoke is that of two believers? It is of one hope, one desire, one discipline, and one in the same service. Both are brethren, both are fellow servants. There is no difference of spirit or of the flesh. Rather, they are truly two in one flesh. Where the flesh is one, the spirit is one too. Together they pray. Together they prostrate themselves. They perform their fasts together, mutually teaching, mutually exhorting, mutually sustaining. They are both equally in the church of God, equally at the banquet of God, equally in straits, in persecutions, in refreshments. Neither has to hide from the other. Neither shuns the other, neither is troublesome to the other. With complete freedom, the sick are visited and the poor are relieved. There is no stealthy signing, no trembling greeting, no mute benediction. Psalms and hymns echo between the two, and they mutually challenge each other as to which on will better chant to their Lord. Christ rejoices when he sees and hears such things. Isn't that beautiful? Now that's a marriage worth going for. That's a lifelong courtship together. I'll close with that.